The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Shadate Hargett Hill from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Community Connections. Every month, we'll introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. We also take time out to spotlight one of our own TRRS volunteers.
Community Connections is underwritten by RBR Physical Therapy,
located at 1300 Corporation Parkway, Suite B, Raleigh, North Carolina.
Call 919-917-7729 for an appointment.
For more information, go to www.rbrpt.com.
Today's show is very special. We got the opportunity recently to speak to an up-and-coming rapper who happens to be blind. His name is Novocaine.
So your given birth name is Mario Nelson. How did you become Novocaine?
Well, it was a long journey becoming Novocaine, but the name Nova came from being from the Northern Virginia area. The word cane is, because I'm blind, I walk with a cane, so you have Novocaine. But it also has a double meaning because I also feel like I'm numb to any kind of failure. I can't feel failure. It doesn't exist to me. So that's another thing to where the Novocaine came in, because when I lost my sight, I was already numb. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I didn't feel going blindness didn't give me any kind of bad feeling, because I was already numb from everything else. So that also has a double meaning for the name Novocaine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I lived half my life in Fredericksburg, Virginia. I lived the other half in Richmond, Virginia. And I lived a little bit in Norfolk, Virginia. But majority of my life was lived in Fredericksburg and Richmond, Virginia.
So you were 17 when you became blind, right?
Yes.
What exactly happened to you? Because we're coming from a place where we may have listeners here who've never heard of you, and there's a lot of people that haven't. So hearing about your story and what you went through, tell me a little bit about how you became blind.
Well, my mom has a unique gene called Leber's, and if you abuse any kind of drugs or something like that, it can really trigger that gene. So I was in a group home, and doctors gave me this medicine and was over-medicating my body with it, so it activated that Leber's gene, and that's how I went blind.
Okay, and I'm just thinking about it. You know, at 17, I remember those days long time ago, but at 17, you are already at that age where you're awkward anyways. How did that affect you as a young person trying to discover who you are and what you are to become and transitioning into manhood and being blind?
Really, blindness, I had already been through so much stuff at that time. When I went blind, it didn't bother me. I don't know why it didn't. It just really didn't. I just sat down one day on the bed and was like, look, you know, blindness ain't gonna beat me. You're going blind. There's nothing you can do about it. You just don't need to lose yourself. So I really focused on still staying the same person I was before I lost my sight. To be honest, I've had a really fun life for a blind person. So I really don't got too many regrets.
Just to hear you talk about how the transition was for you, it's amazing. So the blindness really wasn't the defining moment for you. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, blindness wasn't one of those things that I was already beaten down from life, so blindness couldn't beat me down any lower than where I was already at.
What was going on with you in your household, in your world, that was already beating you down before you became blind?
I was a rape baby. So my mom, every time she saw me, she saw what happened to her. And so she was real abusive mentally and physically. I mean, she tried to get over it and try to be a good woman, but at the same time, she had her demons that she couldn't really defeat. You know, I paid for a lot of that stuff, and then at a certain age, she just got rid of me, threw me into a group home. When she realized that she couldn't really control me or put her hands on me the way she used to, you know, I was separated from my brothers, my cousin, and all that stuff, you know, which was my life, my brothers and my cousins, that we were really tight. So separated me from them and being in a group home full of strangers, lockdown facilities, and just feeling like a caged animal and being pumped up with medication, not really having no more control over your life, then that did it. So So I had to be, you know, I had to step up my fighting game and really, like, get ruthless in those homes and really, you know, just be a animal, kind of. You know, when you got boys from all over the world in the same house, you can only imagine what kind of stuff can go down. So I was always fighting, always, you know, my back against the wall, fighting in these homes and stuff. So by the time I went blind, it was just like, this is just another thing to add to the mountain of problems I already have.
It's just more and more that was put on you. What made you say, you know what, I can be a rapper?
After my mom passed away, we went back to Fredericksburg and stayed down there for a little bit with my brothers. And after that, I knew I wanted to do rap serious, so I went to Atlanta. And me and my brother had a rap group called Paranormal Gang, and we went to Atlanta, we performed, and then we ended up in Indiana. We were really popular, doing shows and stuff like that, and selling tickets. We was really popular, and then, of course, you know, the jealousy thing kicks in, and people think they're better than the other person, and then that sort of group ended up breaking up. That's how I ended up to Indiana, was because of music. I traveled to Atlanta, then Indiana, and it was all based on chasing the dream of being a rapper.
When you think about Indiana, Evansville, Indiana, you don't think of rap, that being a really hip-hop cultural place. Was this hip-hop scene really monstrous there? Is it?
No, it's really not. A lot of my work is done in, like, Atlanta and traveling around areas. But the thing is, no matter where you live at, hip-hop is there. Just because there's no clubs or something like that, you just got to make it happen yourself. So just renting out buildings and selling tickets and passing flyers and stuff out, people will show up. It's not a hip-hop sound, but you just make the best out of it. And to me, it's one of the best places to live if you do music, because there's no competition, really. Mm-hmm. And some of those tactics people use in bigger cities, like billboards and rapping buses and stuff like that, it's going to be cheaper to do that in a smaller town. And if you do that stuff, then you can build a fan base faster, because people in bigger cities that are hip-hop based, it's not really impressive to them. But in somewhere like Evansville, Indiana, it is impressive.
I hate to let you know, but, you know, you're blowing up, and your little area of Evansville, Indiana, is going to start being bombarded by people who are going to come where you are and find out what's going on there.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, the city really needs it. I'm hoping to, once I get on, that there's other people down here that can have a shot, because there's some good artists down here, I'm not going
to
lie.
Right. Now you're starting to work with amazing artists, producers. Who are you working with now?
Well, right now I'm working with Don T from Trillville, and they were a platinum selling group, and that's been a good experience. I'm just working with a bunch of people that have had their hand in a lot of great successes from other people, DJs and people of that sort, and, you know, the people behind the scenes that no one ever sees. So it's a blessing to be able to be around some of these people that help create legends. You know, like names that people know, like Cardi B's and Deja Lo's and the designers. Like, people in the hip-hop field knows who these people are. And to be able to work with people that has had a hand in that success is exciting, because if they was able to help them, then they may be able to help me. So we're just really working and trying to make history.
One of your goals is to be the first blind rapper to be on the Billboard charts?
Yes.
That's a great goal. That's a huge goal.
This is where I'm actually taking steps towards. My song is on radio within a 7-hour radius from where I'm at right now. So we're slowly growing. There's some stations that stepped up to support. I feel like I'm one step closer to that goal.
The song that you're talking about now is what? Swag Killing Everything?
Yes, Swag Killing Everything.
Yes. How did that song come to be?
Well, a lot of people think that blind people look a certain way, and we don't care about our appearance, or we don't know what swag is. So this song kind of shows people, like, okay, well, I was wrong about that. This guy's blind, and he knows what swag is. He knows his jewelry. He knows his clothes. When the music video come out, they're going to see a lot in there. You know, they're going to see this guy really knows how to dress. He's actually outdressing a lot of us other people. I posted a picture in an outfit on Instagram, and this dude was like, when the blind people start looking like this? He's outdressing me. Like, you know, when did y'all say, what happened? Like, so you can tell that what I'm doing is working, and hopefully it inspires other blind people to really take time with their appearance. Just because you're blind don't mean you can't learn what goes with what.
Becoming a trailblazer and you're becoming a trendsetter.
That's why I did the green dreads, and I actually got me a green grill getting made right now. And I'm blind, so when I go to my closet, I want to know everything I pick out is going to work. So I chose like black and neon green as my color. So no matter what I put on, it's going to be fly because I designed my wardrobe to be like that.
How do you feel about being a trailblazer?
I feel like it was meant for me to do this. Like, you know, the way I lost my sight and the way it all played out, I just feel like that God knew that there was a culture of people that needed a voice. And he knew that I had the strength and willpower to do it. And I've always been a strong person. I was a strong teenager to make it through what I went through as a teenager. And I just had that strength, that willpower. So it feels good to me. And I don't feel like it's weight on my shoulders at all. I really just feel like it's fuel in my tank to really get to where I need to go. Because I feel like not only my family depending on me, but a lot of these blind children, young blind adults that have dreams, I feel like they're depending on me. And my main thing is just do the best I can to bring awareness of what's going on. Okay, hip-hop is a culture. So how can blindness not be a culture and hip-hop is a culture? Don't hip-hop got a certain way that they live life, a certain kind of, like, wildness to them? They have a certain kind of lingo they speak, which we call slang and ebonics. We have a certain way we write our words, which is called slang and ebonics and stuff like that. So don't blind people write in Braille? Don't they have a certain way they read? Is it a certain lifestyle? Don't they act a certain way? Well, how can people say you act like a blind person if blind people don't act a certain way? How can people say you act like you're black? Blackness is a culture. Whiteness is a culture. Because they live a certain way, they act a certain way. That's why people can say you act blind. With that being said, how can blindness not be a culture and hip-hop is a culture? Blindness, that makes it a culture. That doesn't make it a disability to me. So, and I feel like that's more powerful to tell a kid than to tell him your blindness don't define you. Because blindness defines you. Because it changes your life. So if it changes your life, that blindness, it may not define you in a negative way. But it does, it's up to you how it defines you. It may define you in a positive way and negative way. For me, blindness defined me in a positive light. But to tell a kid that blindness does not define you is misleading.
I think we've come to be a society of people that feel like we have to shelter children. We have to make things easy for them. But the realness of it is you have to put it out there and you have to make it real to them because they have to live it every day. So if you're blind,
that's
something you live every day with. So you can't sugarcoat that. You have to go full into the storm of what that means and what that's about and have people that are blind just like you are relaying the message in that way instead of having everybody else define what that narrative's supposed to be.
Exactly, and that's the problem, man. And that's why a lot of these kids grow up, and not to be mean, but a lot of them grow up and be like introverts and weirdos, and they don't care about their parents. And that's where you get that stereotype blind person from, that holes are too big, hair not combed, no confidence. The way I'm telling these kids is it's a culture. This is a way of life. This ain't nothing to be ashamed of. You're a superhuman, man. You're awesome. The world was not made to be blind in. You can tell by the grass. You can tell by how beautiful flowers are, the sky. You can tell how parents and why people comb their hair and dress a certain way because we live in a world that was made to see. These people needed to push them. Like, do you understand that you are, in a way, very superhumanish? Like, you're not the average human being. That makes you a real special person. So when people tell these kids, oh, you know, make sure I'm being blind, the kids will be like, okay, I'm blind, but I can do things that you can't do now. And imagine that mindset, a kid having that mindset. Man, you can't bully a kid like that. You can't stop a kid like that. You won't be able to stop a person with that mindset because, you know, I know I have that mindset. And I just want to be kind of like a superhero-ish kind of guy for kids, like, wow, you know, if Novocaine can do it, I can do it. You know, like, give that inspiration. I don't care about people thinking, oh, he, you know, he's corny or he's this and he's that. It doesn't really matter to me. At the end of the day, if I could change three blind kids into to have a mindset like myself, then I did my job. Because if they have end up with a mindset like me, then they're going to influence three other people, and then they're going to influence more people, and it's just going to keep growing. So the thing is to just keep being myself and to prove how unique and special we are and finding the best ways to demonstrate that so other blind people can take what I do and add their own thing to it.
That's an amazing thing. Listen to your music. I can tell you're inspired by a lot of people. You don't curse in your music. You don't do that. And you liken that to basically Will Smith, but you have even more swag than he does, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking to myself, what do you think Mr. Will Smith would think about you saying something like that?
I mean, Will Smith, he probably was out. Like, he was able to really do it on a hip-hop scale. Like, you know, Will Smith don't get a bunch of respect either, man. Like, you know, that's hard work, what he did, man. That's some hard stuff, man. Like, to be able to rap in that era with all these bad boys coming out, man, like, and still sell records, it was crazy. I feel like I'm doing something similar in this era. You could put me on a song with Lil Wayne, I still don't have to cuss, and I'm still going to hold up to him, and I'm still going to be able to sell records. So, with that being said, I was like, well, I don't have to do that if I'm still good at rapping, and, you know, that's just wasted word space where I can use for something else.
Okay. You believe in that mantra of you don't have to use explicit words and language to get your point across.
No, and also it's a respect thing, right? So if you invite me in your home, before I go to your home, you're going to say, hey, I got kids in here. I know, you know, just watch the language and stuff while you're around the kids, right? That's what you're going to ask me. Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm going to have to respect that going into your home. And that's what you expect. Okay, well, my music is you inviting me into your home. So it's the same thing. I know kids are going to listen to music. A lot of kids are going to listen to my music. So I wanted to be also responsible enough to say, you know, I'm not going to say this, and people don't want their kid listening to it. Now, I do have some songs, you know, that are more, you know, for adults. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's still not disrespectful to women or to the point to where grandma would want to turn it off. So my main thing is just to try to respect people's children. And as for the music I make for more adults, you know, your kids shouldn't be listening to that anyway. But, you know, so, but yeah, that's my motto behind it.
Speaking to you is so inspiring, so inspirational. Gone through everything that you've gone through, how can you really, really feel within your spirit and soul that you cannot fail? How are you so sure?
Because I never became the person that people thought I was going to become. So, you know, going through child abuse, I didn't fail. I still, you know, ended up getting, education and stuff like that. Going through all the stuff I've been through, I didn't fail at that. I didn't fail at still becoming a confident person. I didn't fail when I lost my sight. I was still able to keep intact my personality. I didn't fail at that. When my mom and dad died, I didn't let that beat me, so I didn't fail at that. So, you know, everything that I put my mind to, I was like, hey, I won. Like, I remember going to school, and when I was going blind, people kept saying that the people that work for the school was like, oh, he's going to repeat another year. He's going to repeat another year. And I remember standing up to those people one day and be like, look, we're supposed to accommodate me this year. Y'all didn't accommodate me this year. You think that I'm going to be 19 years old still in the school building? I said, how about this? I'm about to go get my GED. They're like, well, you have to study for that. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm just going to go in there and pass the test. And I went the next day, passed the test, brought it back to them, and was like, okay, I'm out of here. So that kind of mindset has just been who I am. So it's just proven to myself over and over again, why would I think I can fail when I have not failed? Even when it comes down to the girl I'm with. You know, she's a very beautiful girl. I said, I want her. And I got her, being blind and still being able to have a beautiful woman like that on my arm. So I didn't fail at that either. So just for like, I don't fail. Like, it hasn't happened yet. So that's just my mindset. And, you know, I said I wanted to be a rapper. I didn't have no money at that time. My partner didn't have no money at that time. We were trying to figure out what's going to happen. How are we going to do this? I didn't fail at it. We were able to get the money. We were able to still build our own company. You know, everybody else wouldn't give us a shot. We built our own company. We built my brand. We built my look. We built my sound. We built everything with no professionals around us. We did that. Two young people that never seen or had any kind of guidance in the music industry learned it and navigated to. I didn't fail at that. I said I want to get my song on radio. I didn't fail at that. So if you're not failing, you're going to just naturally build that confidence. I can't fail. There's something here that's saying I can't fail. So that's why I have that attitude, because I keep winning. And when you keep winning, then you're going to have a winning attitude and a winning mindset. Everybody said there will be no blind rapper. No one's going to find you attractive. Now, everybody said that. I'm proving them wrong. Every last one of them. But I just keep pushing myself and saying, no matter what you say, you can't stop me. No one can stop me. I'm going to do what I want to do, and I'm going to be a rapper because that's what I said I was going to do. And having that mindset has pushed me through everything to the point that right now I'm working with some of the biggest names in the industry, and I feel like I'm coming with a new wealth of information and a new style that's showing people like, yo, this guy's about to make a dent in the industry. He's not coming here to play around. He's not just coming here to stunt. He's coming here to really make an impact in the hip-hop industry.
Well, you know what? I think more young people should feel exactly how you feel. And I think as you continue to grow and be who you are, you're going to be a light to them and you're going to help them find their way and be a mentor to many young people, blind and not blind, to just go out and achieve their dreams and their goals. But before we go, what would you like to leave them with?
Two things that I want to leave you guys with, okay? And that one is, blindness is a culture, not a disability. You're not disabled. To be disabled means you can't do something. You're not allowed to do something. Something is holding you back from doing something. Nothing is holding you back from doing something. We're just a culture of people, just like the hip-hop culture, just like the hippie culture. We're just a culture of people that live our life a little differently. And then blindness, do you define you? It defines you, but it's up to you on how it defines you. Whether that's going to be in a positive light or negative light, no one can tell you that but yourself. If you guys want to be able to stay in contact with me, I know that it's hard for blind people to navigate the web and find my music and stuff. So what I got is a text number, a mobile fan club, that you guys can just text in and music can come straight to your phone when I release stuff, and music video links will be shot straight to your phone, so it'll just make it real accessible for you guys. You guys also can text into this number, ask any questions, and my team will see it, let me know, and I'll be able to answer these questions for you guys. So the number is, you just text the word NOVA, N-O-V-A, to 797979. So that's N-O-V-A, 797979. So you're going to text the word NOVA like a normal text message to the phone number 797979. And that will lock you into my mobile fan club, bring you just a step closer with NovaCan and make it a little easier for you guys to follow my journey.
That is so awesome. I'm so glad you gave that information. We can get your music on SoundCloud, right?
Yes.
Okay.
You guys can go to SoundCloud and type in NovaCane, Swag Killing Everything, and it should pop up.
And your website is NovaCaneLLC.com.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much, NovaCane, for being on Community Connections and taking time out of your busy schedule. I've so enjoyed spending this time with you.
I really appreciate you guys.
It's now time to spotlight the Volunteer of the Month. And we actually have two great volunteers here. Have Charles Stout and Suzanne Stroud. They're both here with us in studio today. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Great. Now, Charles has been with us many, many years, so let's start with him. Charles, how long have you been here?
In about 9 years.
9 years. Okay, how'd you get started with us?
I heard somebody at church say that they had interviewed and were selected, and I thought, that sounds like, and it's something I had thought about, mm-hmm. just hadn't followed up on it. So I came too with, trying to think of her name, who was executive director, Linda.
Linda, okay.
Was executive director then, and she said, you're okay.
Okay.
So I did one Wednesday night show, and all the rest have been Sunday afternoon. I just like doing Sunday afternoon shows.
Well, you have been a fixture of doing Sunday afternoons for a
very long time.
Yes,
for a long time.
Now, you not only do the Sunday show, you also do mysteries, right?
Yes, and I've done two bookshelf programs.
And two bookshelves. Now, how long have you been doing those?
Not long.
Okay.
Well, mystery I've been doing about 5 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know
whoever was doing it left or didn't want to do it anymore, mm-hmm. and so they put up, I think Linda was still here,
okay.
and said, we need somebody who would be interested in it. So I said, yeah, I can do that. So
you do a good job at mystery. You have a great voice for the mystery program.
I love that.
Love listening to that, actually. Now, tell me a little bit about your background, Charles.
Well, I started out as a high school English teacher, mm-hmm. taught English and history for 6 years, and then I went to work for the North Carolina Association of Educators here in Raleigh. That's when I moved to Raleigh in 1967, and I started with them for 33 and a half years and retired in 2001, January 1, 2001. I was 62 that day.
62? So you left on your birthday?
Yes.
What made you decide to leave on your birthday?
62. You can retire at 62.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you just was ready to retire at 62?
I was ready.
Okay. Just say, we're glad that you're with us. We hope you'll be with us for many years. Now, we have Susan sitting here. We're going to talk to her a little bit. Susan, how are you doing?
I'm fine, Shay.
All right. I'm sorry, Suzanne. I am so sorry. I'm good at messing people's names up. I really am. Okay, Suzanne, tell me how you got started with Triangle Radio Services.
Well, I kept reading in the paper that they were looking for volunteers. Okay. So every year I saw that, and every year I said to myself, I need to go and see Guy and talk to her. So I finally did. Mm-hmm. I was able to start on Sundays because I love Sunday afternoons too, and Charles is the best teacher in the world. So, you know, I just wish I could do it more.
That's okay, because, again, we have people that do it all the time, and we have people that come and cycle in, and eventually when time permits, you guys can come and you'll be a regular.
Exactly.
Be cool if you and Charles can be regulars together on Sunday, so he don't have to worry about a partner.
I'm trying to, but once a month is her limit.
Right? I'm going to try and do.
That's great. I'm glad to have her once a month.
Right.
I'm going to try and do twice a month, though, because, you know,
That would be awesome.
Right.
So
great.
Tell me a little bit about your background.
Well, we moved here from Canada in 2000.
Wow.
My husband got a transfer with his work, and then we were able to come to Raleigh, which was heaven.
Okay.
And since then, I work at Merrill Lynch. I'm a financial advisor at Merrill Lynch for the last...
Wow.
It'll be 12 years in August.
Yeah. Wow.
So we've been very fortunate. Raleigh's been very good to us.
That is
to the
amazing.
US. Yes.
Now, I also heard before we started recording that you are a grandmother again.
Again. Yes.
But you're Gigi, right?
I'm Gigi.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, we like that French component.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And grandma sometimes sounds like you're really old.
Thank you.
And you're young and vital. You guys, she's very young and vital, so she doesn't want to be grandma. Gigi suits her just fine. She looks like a Gigi too.
Oh, thanks.
So you said this is your third grandbaby?
The third one, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
One for each of the children.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow,
yeah.
Wow. That is amazing. That is amazing.
Very
they always say that when you become a grandparent, it's better than being a parent because you can spoil them rotten and then you can send them away.
Exactly. You just have a different perspective. It's
right.
Really a lovely... It's like the circle of life,
absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
You see that.
Yeah.
Those transitions and things, so it's great.
Well, you guys, thank you so much for spending a little time with me today and Community Connections and for giving me a few minutes of your time before you start your shift again.
Thank you, Shay.
Right.
Thank you, guys.
Ready to start.
Ready to start, yes. So we got to let them go.
So.
We got to let them go.
We'll spray our voices, right?
Right.
Yes. Thank you, guys, so much.
Thanks, Shay.
Well, we've run out of time for this edition of Community Connections. We hope you enjoyed it. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138.
Community Connections is underwritten by RBR Physical Therapy.
Located at 1300 Corporation Parkway, Suite B, Raleigh, North Carolina.
Call 919-917-7729 for an appointment.
For more information, go to www.rbrpt.com.
Limp in
and leap out.
You've been listening to Community Connections. I'm Shadate Hargett-Hill. See you next time on the radio.